Welcome to Headlines, halakhic debate of current events, a weekly interactive program on some of the most controversial breaking issues of today. Here now is your host, David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group, and author of Headlines.
Good vach, everybody, and welcome to Headlines, debate of current halakhic issues. Tonight's topic is Shidduchim. What do you have to reveal, and what shouldn't you? What don't you have to reveal? Our guest will be Rabbi Elchanan Adler, Rosh Yeshiva of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. A quick preview of the next few weeks' topics. Next week, we'll be discussing the Aguna crisis. Are there any solutions? Our guest will be Mareinu Hagoyin, Rabbi David Cohen of Gvul Yavetz, who spends, unfortunately, much of his time on this. The following week, we'll talk about technology on Shabbos, motion detectors, those ubiquitous cameras wherever we go. Our guest will be Rabbi Daniel Landa, the Rosh Yeshiva of Or HaChaim. Following that, we will have Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, who will be joining us to discuss people with alternative lifestyles. How do we deal with them halachically? If you'd like to call in to tonight's program after 11:20, please call 1-844, the number 4, Headlines. That's 1-844-443-2354. Tonight's topic is Shidduchim, what to reveal and what you shouldn't. We'll take your questions after 11:20 at 1-844-4-HEADLINES. Joining us tonight again is Rabbi Elchanan Adler, Rosh Yeshiva of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. Thank you for joining us, Rabbi Adler. I'm sure that as a Rebbe and a Rosh Yeshiva, you handle a lot of questions about Shidduchim.
It's not a simple topic, but I give you a lot of credit, David, for raising the consciousness of the issue, and I'm happy to be here.
So we've gotten emails over the week from a number of different individuals as well as organizations, and I'd like to throw a few of the questions at you so that you can begin discussing them, analyzing them halachically from a real live question. Binyan Adayad is a Shidduch organization dedicated to helping the Orthodox Jewish community under the direction of Fruma Schiffenbauer. And let me ask forward a number of the questions she's asked.
Okay.
When asked by strangers if everyone in a particular family is healthy or are there learning disabilities, what is and isn't necessary to be disclosed?
Okay, so there's a lot of variables, obviously, in this issue. The Chofetz Chaim deals with issues of Shidduchim in the Sefer, and one of the first things he says is that you can extrapolate from one situation to another. So we're going to speak about guidelines, but the truth is, you know, every situation is unique. You have to know who's asking the question, and based on that, whether it's appropriate to answer and how to answer. I guess it's important to step back for a second and just try to identify some of the issues that we're dealing with in general in terms of the Makoros. And if some of these issues are relevant for a Shadchan, some are issues that are relevant for a third party, and some of the issues are relevant for the parties themselves. First of all, we're talking about, obviously, Lashon Hara and Rechilos. If we're talking about a third party, whenever you speak negatively about somebody else, then potentially we're talking about, you know, issues of Lashon Hara. On the other hand, if there's a situation where somebody's welfare is threatened, then you have a mitzvah to divulge and to disclose. There are issues of Eitzah and Hogenis, which means, of course, that if you're pushing something on somebody which is clearly not in their best interest, then you're talking about an Issa D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver. And that's obviously especially relevant for a Shadchan who has a vested interest in obviously trying to get a Shidduch to work. But if it's clearly not in the interest of the person, then, you know, obviously you have a problem there. You have issues between the people, and that has to do with Gnevas Das in terms of misrepresenting yourself. And just as with a sale and a commodity, you can't misrepresent what you're selling. So in that sense also, you can discuss Shidduchim from that perspective. Going back to the question that you raised, so just remind me again, the question is?
There are health issues in the family. There are not necessarily the meduberes, or the boy himself, but the family has a number of other members in the family, either with learning disabilities, other diseases, and they ask the shadchan, are there health issues in the family? Or they ask a stranger, rather. They call up a reference. Should it or shouldn't it be disclosed?
Okay, so if you ask the question point blank, you can't lie. You have to either give the full answer, the full truth, or you can be somewhat evasive, and that doesn't mean that you have to necessarily say exactly what the issues are. If the issues obviously are very serious, then you have to be more clear about the fact that there could be potential concerns. If the issues are not necessarily serious, and so what kind of issues are we talking about? If there are issues that people, people deal with it, and people take medication, and people are basically functioning, then I don't know that you have to necessarily say anything.
What would be the situation? I was asked this by Mrs. Schiffenbauer. If the boy or the girl had cancer as a child, but it's in remission, and it's been in remission for 5 years, which at which point physicians would consider it to be cured, would it have to be disclosed?
So Rav Sternbach has a tshuva about this. Rav Sternbach says that he talks about possibly distinguishing between the boy and the girl. He's talking not just about the issue you're talking about, but also emotional issues and mental health issues. He says perhaps with the girl, where should she become pregnant, it could be more likely to create a recurrence. There might be more of a reason for the young woman to say something about it. Then again, if the doctors can vouch for the fact that the odds are not very likely that it will have a recurrence, he doesn't feel that either one should have to reveal something like this.
But under the rules of a haftalah reicha kamoicha, is it fair to say that somebody would, if it was their child, they would want to know?
So that's a good question. I would tell you this. If Shlomo Zalman writes, and it's quoted, that separate from the question of whether halachically speaking you need to reveal and you must reveal, there's a question of building a shidduch based on trust. And obviously, for one or the other to find out after they're getting married that there was this condition, it's not a healthy way emotionally to start a marriage. So, Eitz HaTovah, it would be a good idea to obviously have at the right time, we can discuss that soon in terms of the timing, but whoever it is that had this condition in their past should say something at the appropriate time before the chasana, obviously. So you're 100% right in terms of being menschlichkeit and v'lata chakamocha, but in terms of the, strictly speaking, in terms of the chiyuv of revealing, that maybe would not be required.
Now, what about the Isser of Aina? Aina would be basically where you fool somebody when they buy something. Wouldn't it be considered Aina to buy a car that had been, let's say, in an accident? So why would a person who had an illness, even if it was cured, would that rise, would there be a Shaila of Aina?
So there's a very interesting tshuva of the Stipler that deals with this very issue. The Stipler had a case of a person who underwent a particular surgery where it could have been a potential halachic issue in terms of being able to marry into Chal Yisrael, but the psak he received based on his particular circumstances was that he is absolutely kosher. But the Stipler said, separate from that issue, would he be mechuyev to reveal based on the issue of Geneva Stas and Unah? And he thought that you can't compare the case of Shidduchim to the case of somebody buying, whatever it is they're buying, a car, or whatever it might be. Why? He says, because when it comes to buying a commodity, so the person would be very happy to get his money back and buy another one. And the thing that he bought is replaceable. When it comes to Shidduchim, we're talking about a situation where there's emotions involved. Every situation, every person is unique and not necessarily, certainly after the fact, going to want to start again and try to find another shidduch. And therefore, Stipler thinks that Gneivas Das wouldn't necessarily apply in a case like that. It's a big chiddush. Many don't agree with him. Rabbi Yashiv didn't agree with him either. But that was his logic. And he also says another point that Gnevas Das, in a case like this, is only Drabbanan, and perhaps in a situation where the person wouldn't be able to find the proper Shidduch otherwise, for the sake of Peruvu, they would have been waiving this particular issue. Again, it's not everybody holds by this. Many are in a disagreement. But so that would be the distinction that one could make.
So, Rabbi Adler, recently a well-known case in New York where a boy had gotten married and hadn't disclosed a very serious illness, not life-threatening, but a serious illness, and had caused a very fractious divorce, had created a community issue, people taking sides, etc. According to the Stipler, are you saying that what the boy did would be okay because in Shidduchim, because of Pru Revu, there's no need to, you can overlook Aina and Gnevas Das?
Stipler seems to be saying that if the condition would have been such that after the fact they would be prepared to stay married, then it would not go under. In other words, Stipler would agree that if the problem was such that it would be a deal breaker, not just in advance, but post facto, everybody would want out, such a thing would be required to be revealed, and it would clearly be us to go forward without revealing it. He's talking about a case where if they'd know in advance, they would not want to continue with the shidduch, but if they'd be married already, they'd be willing to stay married.
And how do you deal with Aina?
So he makes the point that on two levels. Number one, because the nature of shidduchim is different than buying just whatever it is, because of the fact that it's not someone, you would not view a marriage in the same way you'd view buying something. Buying something, you get back your money and you would start again. You get the next item. Here, it's a very different situation. The complexities of human relationships are such that you want to be married, and if this is the one you're married to, then you don't want to start looking again. Who knows if you'll find somebody else?
I understand, but that's post.
People are not a package deal. People are a package deal. In other words, you basically come to terms with whatever you have.
But that's post fact. But the question of Aina is pre-fact. Are you being over Aina by not disclosing?
Yeah, so good. So that's where the machlokes comes in. That's where Sternbach and the Yashiv feel that if a priori it would be a problem for someone to go forward with such a shidduch, then it would have the same parameters as Aina with purchasing something. Stipler thinks that it would be a function of what would be after the fact. And he also mentions the other issue as well, which I think is interesting, that the fact that if the Isser of Gnevas Das, of not revealing, is only Drabbanan, then maybe we could, and a person would literally have no opportunity to find a shidduch. I'm not saying I agree with this intuitively, but I'm just trying to explain what he's saying, as I understand it.
Let me ask you another question. I was asked this by a Rebbe last week as well. A boy was molested as a child. Would somebody have to disclose that?
The Chavetz Chaim in Klal Tesh and in Rechilos, where he talks about things that you have to reveal. It's interesting. He mentions illnesses that are not known to the other party. He talks about apikorsis, heresy, and he also talks about bais shel pritzus. Bais shel pritzus means where you have things going on in the house where clearly are taboos which are being violated, and ilia rayis and so on, and issues of obviously of abuse. That the Chavetz Chaim says needs to be revealed, but we have to realize a couple of things. How do you reveal it? Who do you reveal it to? The devil is always in the details. You can stop the shidduch without saying specific things about the person, just knowing, making sure the shidduch doesn't go through. Don't necessarily, and the person trusts you. You don't have to say exactly what it is, because the person obviously is scarred for life in any case. But if they're trying to at least get over it and go through whatever therapy it will take to be able to get their life back together, if you're going to reveal this, there's literally no hope for them. So, you have to do all you could right now to not allow such a shidduch to go forward. And I would say even in the case of a sibling, because once you have a situation of this in the house, you never know who's been affected. But, again, you have to be discreet. You also have to know who you're speaking to. In other words, if the person you're speaking to is someone who's going to reveal it to the whole world, then again, you're getting into a lot of potential other problems, which again, you have to be able to balance with, obviously the immediate concern as well. To the extent that the individual will say it, you don't have to be the one to say it. If you're clear that gets to a certain point in the shidduch, or maybe it should be very early on, but maybe at some point it has to be revealed. So you have to be the one to reveal it. As long as it's something that can be communicated in the proper way, that could be sufficient.
We're talking to Rabbi Elchanan Adler of Rabbi Shiva's Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and we're discussing shidduchim, what to reveal and what not to reveal. Here's a question that came in from Chaim from Flatbush. He says, if the parents fight and there are serious shalom bayis issues at home, is that something that should be disclosed by somebody who's called for information?
It's not a simple matter. Obviously, it's something which can obviously have taken a toll on the child. To the extent that you're aware of the details and how much of a toll it took, obviously, you may be in a position to say it, but again, does it have to be you? It's important that if trust is being built between the couple and they're going to get married, then these things should be shared. It doesn't automatically mean that the child is scarred for life. It could be that if they had the right therapy and they're able to get stronger from the situation so they can have a very productive and wholesome life. You have to know the details in terms of the nature of how it's affected the child, and based on that, how it will affect the shidduch itself and the life together with the spouse.
So let's say you don't know. Let's role play for a minute. You be the Rebbe and I'm the parent calling, and I say, Rabbi Adler, you have a boy in your shir, so and so. What can you tell me about him? And you tell me he's a fine boy, etc. Would you say something about what's going on at home or not? And you don't know.
Yeah, I can't say that I would immediately say the first time they get a phone call before they've even gone out. If I know that there's friction at home, but I also know that the boy is healthy emotionally and he's able to be able to find ways to stay on top of his life and not get sucked into the friction at home, I don't know that I would automatically say to the person calling that you should know that there's shalom bias issues. If your person's asking directly about shalom bias, I don't think I could lie. But if they're asking in general about the bacher, I don't have to volunteer information that's necessarily going to stir the shidduch before it started.
So let's say they ask you as follows. They say, because they ask you a catch-all question. So they say, so would you recommend this boy for my daughter?
Okay.
How would you respond?
Again, I don't know the daughter. I don't know the shalom bayis situation of the person calling. I mean, I'll tell you a very interesting story. I was speaking to a Rebbe of mine just not too long ago. I don't want to necessarily mention his name, but I'll tell you the story. It's a story that he had with Rav Eliashiv. He had gone to Eretz Yisrael a few years ago for a different chasana, and he had a specific shayla of Bet Shidduchim to discuss with Rav Eliashiv. It was an Erev Shabbos. They squeezed him in just before Shabbos so he can get back, before Shabbos to where he was staying. The shayla was the following. He had a young woman who had a condition which was such that she'd have a difficulty with having children. Not impossible, not infertility, but problems with fertility. And the question was, should she have to reveal such a thing? And is she obligated? Does he have to say it, or does she have to say it to the chassan, to the one she wants to go out with? So Rav Eliashiv looked up, and this is how it was described to me, and he said, everyone has issues. Everyone comes to a shidduch with issues. You get through them. You for the same reason that she has an issue, whoever she'll marry may have an issue as well. As Nishti said, I don't know that you have to say anything. Okay, so that was the psak. So my Rebbe came back to tell her, okay, you don't have to say anything about this. She can have children. It might require some intervention, but you don't need to say anything. So Meanwhile, they had the asrus. So the father of the girl who's going to get married decided he felt guilty not saying anything. So he calls over the mechutan, the father of the chassan, and he tells him about the condition. And strangely enough, the father of the chassan didn't seem to be unnerved. He didn't seem to get excited. He shrugged his shoulders. He heard, and that was it. Kyle's father didn't understand why he took it so calmly, but that was what happened. Then came the chasana, Shana Rishona went very well. Eventually, Baruch Hashem, she actually had children. The first couple of children required intervention, and a few children after that were natural. Strange thing happened. About a year and a half after the chasana, the boy started having panic attacks. For a few weeks, he couldn't learn. He couldn't do anything, couldn't focus. Anxiety, panic attacks. And then the boy tells the Kala, he says, by the way, when I was a bachur in Brisk, I had the same episode. And again, he required some kind of medical attention at that time, and he got better, and here he had it happened again. So what's striking about this was that Eliashiv was able to say, you know, it's life, you get through it, you get over it, and it works out. So you don't know what the other side is bringing to the table. If you know the bachur is stable, it's unfortunate that the parents have issues of shalom bayis. But unfortunately, there's a lot of problems with shalom bayis in our community. And, you know, just because you're going to say it, you're not going to necessarily be doing the right thing. If the shidduch is meant to be and they're a good couple and they're a good match. So unfortunately, you know, this is where it came from, and maybe it got stronger because of it. Look, if the boy shows obvious problems, you know, that's a different story. If you have reason to think that the shalom bayis problems of the parents have taken a toll on the boy in terms of how he can function, then it's a different issue. But just the fact that there was a shalom bayis problem in the house doesn't mean that you have to say anything about it.
We're talking to Rabbi Elchanan Adler, Rashiva Rabbitzik Elchanan. The number here is 1-844-4-HEADLINES. 1-844-4-HEADLINES. Rabbi Elchanan, let me ask you another question. What would you say if you took that position one step further? I had somebody ask me this question this week, too. The parents were actively looking to get divorced. Is that something you would say?
I think it has to be revealed. The question is, does it need to be revealed before they even go out for the first date? You know, we'll talk about the timing. You know, it's a lot to be said about when.
Well, halachically, clearly it doesn't. The question is, when you're called, you don't know if you're going to be called back after 3 or 4 or 5 dates. So this may be the only time you're called.
Right. If the question is very specific, and they'll ask me about the shalom bayis for the parents, and I know that very fact that you just mentioned, I don't want to tell you 100%, but I can be inclined, if I felt that the information would be treated properly and not spread, and I felt that I can trust the people who I was speaking to not to spread it, I could consider sharing that, but not exactly in the way that you're saying it, not to say that they're about to get divorced, and I know they are, but, you know, more in the sense that, you know, there may be some issues of shalom bayis, especially if that's how they're asking the question, so I could say it. But again, to a stranger, I don't know. I have to feel like I know if I have a relationship with. I have Baruch Hashem Talmidim whose parents I have a relationship with. So if I know them and I have a relationship with them, then I'm more likely to say something which I know that they will not share with others. If I'm talking to parents who I don't know or a stranger, I don't know that I could share that information either.
Okay, let's take a phone call. We have Yehoshua from Brooklyn on line one. Yehoshua, do you have a question for Rabbi Adler?
Agudvach, I'm not sure if it's a question or more of an important guideline that was shared with me a while back. And my wife and I are involved in helping young people with shidduchim as much as we can. I feel all young couples are the best position team out there to try to help the shidduch crisis. But just to focus on one principle, talking about Ahavas Yisrael and compassion and kindness for all parties involved, I wish to just emphasize that nobody benefits and there is no kindness in the long run by trying to push through a shidduch on any type of pretenses that will be revealed to be misrepresenting. In other words, ultimately the resentment and the feeling of being duped will haunt the relationship, and it cannot be kind for either party to be stuck in that type of relationship. For the one doing the duping or for the one feeling duped, if it's meant to be, this is a guideline from the Lubavitch Rebbe, if it's meant to be, then the information that seems to be adverse or unappealing will not faze the party, the real Bashert. And by the way, the story you just demonstrated is a perfect example. The Bachar that had that history in his background, the panic attacks, somehow that family was comfortable going ahead with the shidduch, even with this fact revealed before the wedding, very close to the wedding.
Yeshua, let me just say add a little punctuation point to what you're saying. You know, we know many people are nizer in the Sefer Hasidim, almost more than the Shulchan Aruch in certain ways. Like if it's in the Sefer Hasidim, they won't do it. The Shulchan Aruch takes second class. So here's the Sefer Hasidim in Tafkuf Zion says that lo yechasa adam mum bnei beso. A person should not conceal a mum. And he says, if yesh maisim roem lahem, sh'ilu hayudim lohayu meschatnim bhem, yifarsim. He says, a person has to reveal anything that if the other side knew about it, it would be an issue with them in the marriage. So what you're saying from the Lubavitcher Rebbe is not only good practical advice, but so it's interesting that there are many people who won't give the same name, and when a window is covered, will make sure to leave a hole. But yet when it comes to revealing minor things, like things that would upturn a marriage upside down, don't seem to take this admonition to heart. So thank you very much. You go ahead, Rabbi Adler. What do you have to say?
I know, I echo it. I happen to agree, and I think it's mentioned by Shlomo Zalman as well. He says, you know, the kind of resentment that lingers after the fact that something, like we mentioned before, the case where there was a condition that was healed, as if cancer, Rahman al-Litzlan, and right now the doctors say there's no possibility of remission, but not to reveal it is also, you know, it creates a sense of starting the marriage with a, you know, not being straightforward, and it creates resentment afterwards. So I agree with you.
Now, what would you say, Rabbi Yadla? A girl had an affair, and she's done tshuva since then, and now she, you know, is a totally wonderful, this is dealt with in the Paiskim.
The Moshe has a tshuva about this, the Moshe Feinstein, yeah.
And it's interesting, the Marsham has a tshuva about this too, and the Marsham says, he was asked, it happened to be an orphan. He says, when an orphan, a mail order bride who had an affair, and actually, had a child that I imagine was given up for adoption, and the boy doesn't know about it, and does she have to reveal? And the Marsham says she does not have to reveal the fact that she had an affair, which is not as Ramesha says, and in fact, he goes into a lengthy way how they should write the ksuba and read the ksuba at the wedding so that it's not problematic. What are your thoughts about this, Rabbi Adler?
I'm very much inclined to say like Ramosha. I think that it has to be revealed. Again, you know, Baruch Hashem, she's done tshuva, but as Ramosha puts it in the tshuva, she should tell him before they get engaged that I this was where I was then, and I gave in to my temptation, and I've been able to get past that. But it was clear to Ramosha that has to be disclosed. Yeah.
Would a Rebbe have to disclose that too? Or a teacher?
It has to be disclosed. The question of who discloses it and at what point. You know, the Rebbe should be aware in the loop to the extent that if it's not disclosed by the parties, then maybe he has to see to it to disclose it. But again, you know, usually if there's a relationship with the Rebbe, then the Rebbe can see to it that the person himself knows to disclose it at the appropriate time.
What happens if a sibling has become irreligious? Is that something you would disclose? So let's look at different three ways. Does a Rebbe have to disclose it? Somebody being called for reference, a Shatrin, or the individual? How would you, an irreligious sibling?
Good. So if you're asked point blank a question like that, you have to be honest. If you're not asked specifically, I don't know that you need to say it unless you know that for this family, it's a deal breaker. Whatever point they're going to find out about it, their hakpadis are such, their red lines are what they are. They could not imagine such a shidduch. Then I think you can disclose it at an earlier stage, assuming that, again, it's something that's under wraps because the family doesn't want others to know about it, so you don't want to necessarily make it public knowledge. But if you know that they're clearly not going to agree to such a shidduch based on this information, I think you have to say it. Again, assuming that it's not going to become, out there in a way that would be inappropriate. Really, the person to disclose it is not you, but the boy or the girl themselves. At some point, again, when you get to the point where things begin to get serious, we can talk about different people say different things about what that means, how far along it is. But really, it should be something that could be disclosed between the parties, not necessarily before they start. Because in most cases, and unfortunately, again, even in the finest homes, you have cases like this, and they can decide at that point whether they're willing to look at the person with all their malice and be able to swallow this particular aspect of the family, or whether they're not. But, you can let them make that decision when the time comes, when it becomes more relevant. Why mention it before that?
Okay, what would you say to this question? This was sent by Yosef of Long Beach. He says, we're speaking to Rabbi Elchanan Adler of Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and the topic is Shidduchim. What do we have to disclose and what don't we have to disclose? He says, if a family is struggling financially but puts up a good front and people don't know about it, now a boy or a girl are looking to marry into that family, and they're assuming that they'll be given assistance based upon the lifestyle that the family lives. Somebody who's called for information, should they disclose it or not?
It's a good question. It's hard to answer on the spot. Chavetz Chaim does mention something to the effect that sometimes you know that both sides are deceiving each other in issues of Nadin. And in a case like that, the Chavetz Chaim says you don't need to say anything because obviously neither side is being fully honest about what they can afford. It's hard to say, whether that's happening over here, but you never know. It could be that, unfortunately, people put up a front on one side and on the other side. I don't know offhand. It'd be hard to know what to say.
We're speaking to Rabbi Elchanan Adler of Rabbi Shivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. The number here is 1-844, the number 4 headlines. That's 844, the number 4 headlines. So, it's Rabbi Adler, it seems that there's not much that we have to disclose.
Anything that's going to affect the normal functioning of the couple in terms of their life should be disclosed.
And give me a few examples of that.
Psychological issues, physical issues like you have medical conditions, Crohn's disease, things of this nature, psychological issues, certainly anything that could affect the normal functioning of Shalom Bayis should be disclosed.
If the boy had a bad temper,
Midos, of course. If a person has a bad temper and you know that it can create issues of Shalom Bayis on a day-to-day basis, you have to make sure that such information is disclosed. Is the boy dealing with it? Is it in the past or is it in the present? Maybe if you know that it was something that he dealt with and it was he was able to get over it, that's one thing. It's also important to see if you're asked directly. It's a different story. It's not as if you don't, if you're asked directly in situations like this, you may have to disclose. You can't lie. If you're asked about finances, like you asked before, the situation of finances, it could be, and if you're aware of something like this and you're asked about it, you need to say something. So I don't know that you're, you know, there's nothing to be disclosed. I think it's important to know who you're disclosing it to. Chavetz Chaim keeps mentioning the point about if you know the person you're speaking to is someone who's going to start sharing this information indiscriminately, then you have to be careful. Then you may not have a right to disclose. If you know the information is going to be regarded as private, it's relevant, it's a TLS, you share it for that purpose. You know, you share it. It's, you ask directly, and you know that's something that is important to the people who are asking the question. You can be forthright.
Here's a question, Rabbi Adler. Again, the number is 1-844-4-HEADLINES. Rabbi Adler, a question from a Rebbe in Flatbush. He has a boy. He had a boy a number of years in his class that he strongly suspects is gay. He's being called about this boy for shidduchim by girls, the parents. Should he disclose any of his suspicions?
It's hard to know what suspicions are based on. You know, in other words, he may need to get more information about the situation before you start assuming something and start giving that information. You know, some kind of a, you know, a stample. You know, when you share it, you're giving credence to that. What is the suspicion? The suspicion is just that. You know, how much does he know about the condition? You know, these things are sometimes not what you think they are. It's certainly worth investigating, but the question of whether he needs to say it, I wouldn't want to take that on my shoulders right now to say he needs to say it. But then again, it has to be thought about. I would, maybe he needs to speak to a professional to try to get a better sense of, you know, how one can see such behavior and to define it as such in terms of whether there's such a tendency or not.
Okay, here's another question. This is Chaim from Borough Park.
I tell you, Bever, these are not easy questions, as you can recognize.
These are questions, real-life questions that people are asking. Okay. If the boy or girl had a broken engagement prior, should it be disclosed?
It has to be disclosed, no question. Again, the question of when and by who, that's the issue.
But you see, Rabbi Adler, is a broken engagement something of importance? Like, is that... Like, you know, like in the din of Geneva's Das, the necessity is to disclose a mum. Is a broken engagement a mum? Or would a broken engagement be aina? I mean, it's something in the past. Like, I don't see a broken engagement of having any importance.
Now, the definition of a mum in this regard, unless you go with the Stipler, which again makes the threshold much higher, but if you go with those poskim who assume that it's not just what would be a problem post facto, but they would say that anything that most people would see as a reason that they would not want to proceed with the shidduch is defined as a mum. That has to be revealed. Now, I think in the minds of many people, the situation of a broken engagement would be a cause for concern. And they would feel deluded. You know, it's not told. You know, it is public knowledge, and they're not known, and they don't hear about it. So I, in that regard, it should go under the requirement to be disclosed. Again, how it's disclosed makes all the difference. And at what point? In other words, if you tell them before you get started, so they'll say, why bother? But if you really know that the young man or young woman are really appropriate for each other, and you want to get over that first hump, that the person shouldn't say no before they meet, so you wait a couple of dates, and then they see that, you know, that they have alamilis except for this particular unfortunate piece in their past. So then it gets disclosed at that point. It's a different reality for the parties involved. They can look at it and say, okay, we're willing to overlook that point. It's just, but, you know, and some people maybe won't.
But Rabbi Adler, let's assume...
How could you go forward with the shidduch and then have it not disclosed, and then they're getting married, and then suddenly they find out that they were previously engaged? I mean... Again, it's something that people can take. Someone mentioned before, Yeshua, about feeling resentful. That certainly will exist. You know, why would you not have mentioned something like that? It's an obvious.
Let's assume they wouldn't find out.
They wouldn't find out. How can you be sure they wouldn't find out? Today, so many things can be discovered very easily. someone was previously engaged, that wouldn't be information that could come out at some point. I have a hard time.
But then, if that's the case, the bar is so high that it's, or rather so low, that almost everything has to be disclosed. Everything will be found out. The possibility everything could be found out.
Everything. And again, there are things that are considered to be in people's minds, things that would raise a red flag, and there are things that would not. I think I would imagine that an issue like previous engagement would raise a red flag. Again, how is it disclosed is important. When you a person who knows the situation, knows why it was a broken engagement, and if they're the proper people to communicate it, maybe sometimes it's not the parties themselves. Maybe it can be an individual like a Rav who's aware of the situation, and they can reassure the other party that you shouldn't look at this as a problem because I know the circumstances. So then at least it was full disclosure, but at the same time was cushioned and was expressed in the right way. But to completely hold the information back and not reveal it, I would have a hard time imagining that you can completely ignore it. I don't know if you disagree. I hear you, but I personally don't think that should be something that shouldn't simply be hidden.
Okay, here's a question from Ari of Muncie. If a girl has the BRCA gene, do they have to disclose it? If a girl has the BRCA gene, do they have to disclose it? The BRCA gene is a somewhat new test that means they have a high predisposition to breast cancer.
What does a high predisposition mean? What does it mean? Are there statistics involved? I mean, we have all kinds of things that we're predisposed for. I don't know, just because, I know the whole issue of genetic testing now, getting to the point where you want to know about all kinds of predispositions. I'm not so sure that it's such a good thing. I mean, I have my doubts about it. But, it, especially if you talk about the realm of Emunah B'Tachon and then saying, I want to find out any potential genetic disorder that could exist, I don't know that's necessarily a good thing. But given the fact that you're saying there is this particular test. Look, if the person has information about themselves and they're building a relationship with the person they're going out with, probably it's something that could be shared if they feel like they want to be able to, to be honest with the person if it's something that's on their mind. But I don't know that it has to be a litmus test for a shidduch. I don't know. Again, if you're going to me statistics, it's a different story. Predisposition is not a condition. It's not a medical condition. It just means that there's a higher risk for something. So different people have higher risks for different things. If you ask me about someone who's smoking, I would say yes. If there's a smoker, the bachur is a smoker, and they're going out on dates, and the girl doesn't know that he smokes, I would say absolutely. Because there we're talking about not just a predisposition, but talking about hard statistics. He's, his life is going to be shortened because of his lifestyle. But just this particular test, I'm a little bit hesitant to assume that it has to be disclosed.
Okay, here's a question from Rivka. If a boy is on Ritalin for ADD, would you consider that something that has to be disclosed?
Unfortunately, many people are on medications like Ritalin. ADD is very, very common, but it has to be disclosed. It has to be disclosed because it's something that right now is a condition that they're taking medication for. If the person had been on Ritalin in the past and they're no longer on it, then I don't necessarily know that it has to be. Although, again, on a comfort level, it might be something that they might want to share with each other. I don't think it needs to be disclosed if it was in the past. If they're on it now, someone has to disclose it. Again, if it affects the functioning, and that's certainly the case with something like this, it should be revealed.
So, in closure, given that there have been so many questions, if you had to lay down like three or four rules, what would they be?
So again, if you're asked as a third party, you have to first of all recognize who's asking. Is it a stranger? Is it a Rav? Is it somebody who you feel you can trust with information? Then you have to ask yourself, is it a pointed question? Is it a general question? To the extent that it's a very specific question and it's information that you're going to be sharing, which will be kept confidential, I think it's appropriate to answer honestly. If it's to an appropriate source, if it's about volunteering information that you don't have to necessarily share, the question becomes how serious is it? If it's something which, again, it's a responsible party that's going to have this information, and it's something which clearly is going to affect the day-to-day. So before the shidduch begins, I don't know that you have to say it, because you can let that decision be made after a couple of dates, whether it's something that has to stand in the way of going forward or not. But you have to see to it that it gets disclosed, either you or the parties themselves. I think those are the basic guidelines for a third party. In terms of a shadchan, you have to deal with the question of Eitz HaShen Hogen. If a shadchan is in a position of offering advice, I would argue with either, especially if there's a betraying of trust involved, if they're coming to the shadchan expecting a good shidduch, and the shadchan is doing something which is really not in the interest of the parties, and they're aware of issues, you're talking about a serious transgression right then and there of Lufnei Iver. And according to many shittas, Lufnei Iver, in the classic sense, when you're giving somebody, helping someone do an Aveira, even if they don't do the Aveira, even if you just put the possibility in front of them of their stumbling, if you handed the Nazir the cup of wine, even if he didn't drink it, many hold that that's already Lufnei Iver. So I would carry that over here. If you would offer advice which is misguided and misleading, even if nothing happens, even if they don't even go out, the shadchan has to recognize the responsibility, or really, any situation where you're coming forward and offering a suggestion and advice which is clearly not for that person's benefit. You're talking a serious avera b'fnei iver, and that's obviously a big problem.
Okay, I'd like to say... Go ahead and finish, Rabbi Adler.
No, and that's the last issue, is the Gneivas Das issue, which is really the issue between the couple themselves and what has to be revealed. And we talked about some of the guidelines, I think, that has to be. Look, I would just summarize everything by saying, if a person is unsure about how much to share, when to share, how to share, they need to seek the appropriate guidance of a Rav or someone they trust who has experience with dealing with such matters. People have biases all the time, and how they interpret information is based on those biases. People jump to conclusions, I have to share this, I shouldn't share. People err on both sides, and it may not be the right way to look at it. If you have any doubts, you need to be able to discuss it with people who are more responsible, who have dealt with these types of issues, and hopefully get the right hadracha, the right guidance.
Well, thank you, Rabbi Elchanan. That was very sensitively and wisely, and obviously somebody who has a lot of experience. Again, that was Rabbi Elchanan Adler of Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening.
I'd like to conclude, as we always do, with a short varta on the parsha. This week's parsha, on five different occasions, speaks about the Mata Maisha, the staff of Maisha. It speaks about how he cast it on the ground and it turned into a tannin. It speaks about, by the different makos, how he used the staff to split the water, to bring up the tzvardeya, the kinim, etc. So what is this emphasis on the staff of Moshe? And in last week's parsha, we see that Hashem asks Moshe a question. One of the few times in the Torah that the Rabbeinu Shalom actually asks a question of man. He says, Ma zeh biyadcha? Now, usually a question is because somebody doesn't have the information. Now, Hashem had the information. He knew what Moshe had in his hands, as well as Moshe did as well. So what was the purpose of the question of Ma zeh biyadcha? Now, we find it elsewhere in the Torah. For example, we find he asks Adam a question. He says, Ayeka. And how do we understand that question, Ayeka? Well, the Jewish philosophers say, Ayeka, he asked Adam after he's sinned, he said, Ayeka, where are you? What have you done? What have you done to yourself? What have you done to the world? Ayeka, v'haltzdu. So what is the question of Ma zeh biyadcha? And I put to you that the question of Ma zeh biyadcha is, what is a staff? What does a shepherd's staff represent to him? What does he do with it? Well, he uses the staff to guide the sheep, to protect the sheep. If there's a wolf or a fox, he'll use it as a club. He uses it as a guide, as a guard. He uses it to comfort them, to care for them. So he uses it to climb. So his staff represents his power. So when Rabbeinu Shalom asks Moshe, Maze Biyadcha, he's asking him, Moshe, what do you have in your hand? What have you got? What's your power? And Moshe says, I have my staff. And he says, throw it on the ground. And what happens when he throws it on the ground? It turns into a snake. What is a snake? A snake is the evil, the devious, the serpentine, slippery, scary, frightful. And what's the message here? The message is, we all have some power. We all have power. We're all part of a society. We're part of a family. We're fathers, we're mothers, we're brothers, we're sisters, we're sons, we're daughters, we're children. We all have power. We all do something. We have jobs, or we're students, we're caretakers. So we all have power in the circle of our life, in the circle of our family, in the circle of our society, of our culture. And the question is, what do we do with our power? Do we use it for the right purposes? The word mata means a staff, but it also means to be nota, also means to turn, to deviate, to pivot, maybe to drift or depart. So a staff can be very straight. Or alternatively, a staff can take us maybe where we shouldn't be going. We hold the staff, we have power. We cast it down, it turns into a snake. And who does he use the staff with? He uses it with Pare. And what did Pare do? Pare was somebody of immense power. He was the ruler of the world. And what did he do with his power? Well, take a look at what he did. We'll go through a few of them. 10 makos, 10 punishments, 10 plagues were brought upon Pare. Now a person, that the Yavid says that man has 10 core faculties, 3 intellectual and 7 emotional. And he starts at the top. He says, a person at the very beginning of his intellect begins with inspiration. You have an idea. And that idea is, it's what sheds life. It opens up. It's the first spark, that light bulb that's in the box. And you could use that inspiration for good, to bring life. That's where it all starts with. Or you can pervert it. So we start, the last mark is Makas Bechoros. That's where he goes backwards. That's the most serious. And what does Makas Bechoros mean? Paro, you could have used that power in your hand to bring life. Instead, what did you do with that power? You used that power of intellect to bring death. You had children thrown in the Nile. You caused depression, subjugation, pain. What's the next human faculty afterwards? Is understanding. After you have that inspiration, you have to broaden it. It's like with the mothers are typically binas v'nashim, they take that drop of zera and they turn it through 9 months into a child. They build on it. You take that idea and you build on it and you check it and you see whether it works or it doesn't work. You test it. You get enlightened. That's the right way to use it. What did Pare do with that power? He turned it into darkness. That was Makas Cheshech. And the next human faculty, the final intellectual faculty, is Das. Das means connection. Vayeda Adam Eschava Ishtai. Where we connect all that understanding. We make it real. We make it practical. In a million different ways, it spreads out through all our life. That's the way it builds. And what's the abuse of it? Is the Arba. A million little things, all eating, destroying, gnawing, chewing, where they could have been affirming and building. What's the first of the emotional faculties? The first of the emotional faculties is love, right? Ahava. Rain represents the gift of love. It saturates. California is going through a drought now. They're cutting down trees. They're destroying ancient oaks, avocados, figs. Man, they've been there for hundreds of years because water is the gift of life. Birchas Geshem. You know what Pare did with love? You know what ice is? Ice is love, frozen love. The love you never gave anybody. the love you kept for yourself. Oh, you are so stingy. You would never say, I love you. The parent who never says, I love you. The child who maybe doesn't love. These are all the abuses of the human faculties. What's the next great emotion? The next great emotion is gvura. What does that mean? The ability to restrain yourself, strength. Too much love isn't a good thing. So it's inhibition. It's keeping things under control. But strength can be very abused. Could be anger. Could be fire. In a relationship, they could be deathly. As a ruler of society, they can be terrible. So what does Pari use them for? What does it say? He said to Moshe in Makashchin, take soot from an oven, that's heat, that's fire, cast it in the sky, and everybody in Egypt will be covered with boils. The abuse of power, the abuse of the power that we have in our hands. And the greater the power we have, the greater the ability for abuse. Remember, it's only an Adam who has the highest sense of power that could become an Avi Avai Satoma. Truma, which has a small power, is only becomes a Shlishi Watoma Kach and becomes a Ravi. Misha Gadol Mechaveira Yitzre Gadol. So what is the message? He says, it's the staff. You hold it in your hand and you create, throw it down, it becomes a snake, it becomes a Tanin. Pari abused that power. Use that staff to strike the water, bring the frogs, the shrin, etc. It's that staff. That's the message here. Will we abuse the power given to us, or don't we abuse the power given to us? Do we use it for the rightful things? What's the message to us? We all have power. The message from this week's parsha is, hold that staff carefully. Look at your life. Check your faculties. Are you using your intellect in a way where it's nourishing, where it builds, where it creates a better community society? Or are you abusing it? I wish you all a wonderful Vach. I'll see you next week when we're going to be discussing the Aguna crisis or their solutions.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.